Log Talk Radio. Oh, good evening, and welcome to another edition of the one and only ScaryCast. This is Dr. John Stamey, and am I glad to be here tonight. I've got my co-host Robin with me, and we've got a great show lined up. First of all, Robin, how are you doing, and how is all your family holding up to the coronavirus? And by your family, I'm also talking about the dogs, the cats, and the pets that you love.
We are all thankfully doing great. So far, so good on this end. Nobody's sick. The people are good. The pets are good. So we're all doing well.
Well, that's great. I'm just glad you're doing well, and Pat's doing well, and all that stuff. Now, how's my best buddy Chester? How is he doing? Chester's the dog. What kind of a dog? He's just a dog. He's all dog and all cool, right?
Yeah, he's half Shih Tzu and half Jack Russell. I call him a jack shit.
Well, when I'm there, he's my best friend. So that's
yeah.
So cool.
He's doing great. He's mooching cookies off of everybody, which is what he does best.
Well, I'm gonna be there soon enough, and I might even just bring him. I might have to bring them all a bag of something fun, you know. And
yeah.
So we'll see what I can do. Got to keep them happy. They're dogs. You talk about dogs being people. They are the biggest human beings in the world at your house.
Oh, they are. You know, I went out and bought a package of rawhide bones for them and marrow bones for them, so they know they've got them. And they all were bugging for them tonight. I'm like, no, you're waiting until tomorrow so I can supervise this. You start giving 13, 14, 15 dogs bone, you have to supervise. They cannot be unattended with them. Oh, they're terrible.
Just children. They're great. But that's
rotten.
But that's why we love them. Well, anyway, great to have you here. And we'll have a lot of people joining us tonight. Papa's going to come on early a little bit later. And then, so first of all, the first half of the show, we're going to talk with you about happy birthday to Dr. Igor Burtsev, who just had a birthday. One of the finest people ever put on this planet. He really is. And halfway through the show, we will be joined by Shane Ollis for more ghost stories from the Perryville battlefield, one of the most haunted places in America. And, you know, and then I got, of course, just lots of cool stuff to talk about. So anyway, Dr. Igor Burtsev, the great hominologist from Russia, how did you meet him? I know he's one of your great friends, and he's a great friend of mine. And how did you meet this wonderful guy?
Well, he's like family here. He's got his own room, and when he's in the States, this is where he primarily hangs out. We actually met completely by accident. I was friends with a gentleman. Yeah. By the name of Robert Daigle, and who's just a beautiful human being inside and out. And when I was having all my activity years ago, he was the one person that I reached out to, and he responded, and he was very kind. And, you know, we had talked, and he said, if you ever have any more activity, let me know. So you go fast forward several years, and I had just moved into a certain town at a new house, and I was there less than.
Hold on. When you're talking about activity, some of our fans may not know what you're talking about. Do you mind explaining
Bigfoot that? Bigfoot activity. Yeah, Bigfoot activity, Dogman activity. So I had just moved, and I was there for less than a week when we saw the Bigfoot walking around the backyard. And I had called Bob and said, listen, this is what's going on. He came out and was just, there was so much activity, and the pony's mane was being braided, and the Bigfoots were doing pranks all around the house, and we had footprints, and he camped out there one time, and we could see the shadows of three of them walking around. And so he was pretty excited about it, and he had went to a conference in Salt Fork, and when he did, Igor was there, and he called me, and he said, would you mind, because Bob is fantastic, if you give Bob information, he doesn't tell it to anybody. He's like a steel trap. I mean, he's wonderful. And he said, would you mind if I discussed your case with Dr. Igor Borstov? And I said, well, I don't know who it is, but okay. You know, if you want to, you're all right. So he did. He called me again, and he said, listen, I'm standing right here with him, and he's so intrigued by what's going on in your house. He wants to know if he can come out and visit. Well, I didn't let hardly anybody at my place because of all the Bigfoot. And I said, Bob, do you trust this man?
Now, what state were you in?
Michigan.
Okay, gotcha. I'm just trying to keep track of this for everybody.
And I said to him, I said, do you trust him? And he said, yeah. I said, Robin, I promise you, he would never, ever do anything to hurt him. And I said, okay, I trust you. And if you trust him, okay. So he came out, and he was going to stay a few hours, and he stayed 10 days. And he only left because he had a ticket back to Moscow. And we have been very close friends ever since. And when he was there, when he went to leave, he invited me to speak at the International Scientific Conference for Hominology in Siberia that he had. So I actually went and did that. But we have been very close friends ever since. He's done a lot of research at my house since then. And that was back in 2009, 2010, something like that. So, we've just been really close. He's one of the family here. And in fact, I talked to him two or three times today. Got hold of him this morning to wish him happy birthday. He was pretty excited about that. So we just have been close ever since. And when I moved here to South Carolina, he just switched places and stays here. He was here for I think he got here in August and he left in October, November, one of the two. It was end of October, first part of November, because he left here and went to Hinobia. And that's the first weekend in October. So, and then we opened up the International Hominology of the Forest People with Igor and I, and we brought Jan Carter in. So Jan's doing it as well. And we've just kind of taken off from there. But like I said, when he's in the States, he stays here a good deal of the time.
That's great. Now, Hinobia, for those that don't know, remind us what that is.
That is a huge conference that goes on every year, generally the first weekend in October. It's quite a big production. It's not just a conference. They have got vendors that come from all over for it. So it's quite a big deal. Igor's really enjoyed it the last few times he's been in the States. He's won. He always has a really good time. So we made sure he was able to get there this year or this past October.
Well, that's great. So what are some of the most endearing stories that you have about the good doctor? I didn't tell you that. That's what we trapped you. Because you got of the funny stories. I did. Totally trapped you here on ScaryCast. So, yeah, give us a couple of funny stories. We love Igor. We love Igor stories. We do.
Anybody that knows Igor, they know that he is, number one, he is the top researcher in the world. He is extremely famous. But when you actually meet him, he is such a normal, regular person that it's absolutely hysterical. You would never know it. And when I first met him, he never bothered to tell me he was famous. I had no idea who he was, other than he was one of the top researchers. That's all I knew. And I didn't know anybody in this field because, I mean, I've been around these Bigfoot since I was a little kid, but I stayed out of the limelight. I stayed away from everybody. I wasn't on Facebook at the time. I didn't get on Facebook until Igor said, no, you're going on Facebook because you're going to run my group. So I didn't know he was this big deal. He's very unassuming. He's very laid back. He's just a regular guy. He has an extreme wit about him. I mean, he's funny as can get out. He's just a person that you enjoy hanging out with. And so I didn't know this, and now he asked me to go to Russia to do this conference, and I said, okay, I will. And I'm downplaying all it because I didn't really know. And my son, who lives in Canada, works the Musqueam First Nations, and I told him I was going to go. And he's like, Mom, I'm concerned. Like, you're taking off to another country, and we don't know who this person is. And I said, well, his name is Dr. Igor Borstov, and my understanding is that, you know, he's very well respected. I should be just fine. He's like, oh, okay. And then, you know, typical of one of my kids, he's going to find out every bad thing he can find out about him if his mom's gone.
Well, that's good. You love your kid for that, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I get ready to go, and this is right before I literally get on the plane, and he calls me, says, "Mom, do you know who this man is?" And I said, "Yeah, his name is Dr. Igor Borstov. You know, he's a friend of Bob's, and I've known Bob for years." And he's like, "No, he's a really big deal, Mom." And I said, "No, he's not. He didn't act like it. He stayed at the house for 10 days. He was real laid back, you know, just acted like a normal person." And he said, "No, he's huge." So I'm like, "Really?" So I get on the plane and I go to meet him, and I fly into Moscow, and then I have another 2-hour drive, and then I get on a plane for Siberia. And Igor was waiting for me at the airport to go to Siberia. So we're sitting on this plane, and I looked at him. I said, "I have a bone to pick with you." And he says, "Yeah." And he kind of gives me this little, you know, shit-ass grin. And I said, "You never told me you were famous." And he kind of looked at me, and he says, "Oh." And I said, "Yeah, when were you going to let me know about it?" And he looks at me, and he said, "You never asked." I wouldn't think that was something a person had to ask, you know, but apparently with Igor you do. But he's just a funny guy, and my kids absolutely adore him. And he was at the house, and was staying at the house for like 3 or 4 months at a time, which was normal. And my son at the time was about 15, not even 15, I think he was about 14. And he said, "You know, Mom, we lived on a dirt road." He said, "Can I go to the next road over? I want to ride my skateboard." It was just like a dead-end road. And it was cement. And I said, "Okay, but I want you to be careful." And Igor says, "What is this skateboard?" And I said, "Do not even get any ideas." Like, literally, no. Because it's very common to see him out in the front yard playing kickball or whatever with the kids. And so he says, "I want to go." And I said, "No, you are not going to go. You're going to get hurt." "No, no, no, I will be fine. I will not get hurt." And I said, "Igor, if something happens to you, I will never forgive myself." "Oh, no, I'd be fine. You don't worry." So he goes, and all three of my kids go, and they go over there. And I said to my son, I said, "Do not break him. Like, I want no bloodshed, no skinned up body parts." And he says, "Oh, no, you worry. I'd be fine. I'd be fine." So they go, and they don't come back, and they don't come back. And I asked one of the Bigfoots, I said, "Will you please find out what's going on over there?" He comes back, and he said, "Don't worry, he's okay." I said, "What happened?" He said, "They'll tell you when they get home, but do not worry, he is okay." And I thought, well, at least I know something's happened, but he's okay. They come in the door, Igor's grinning ear to ear, blood coming down all over his arm, running down his body, all over his leg. And I said, "What in the world happened?" Hand cut open, arm, elbow cut open. I said, "What happened?" And he says, "I rode the skateboard." I said, "Did you ever get on the board, or did they just push your body across the rocks?" And he's like, "No, no, I'm fine, really." I said, "Igor, you're bleeding profusely." Thinking, okay, we've got an international incident that's going to happen now. I said, "Did you?" And my kids are just cracking up. "Mom, we told him not to. He jumped on the skateboard and tried to take off on it, hit a bunch of rocks, and just did a complete somersault with it." I was like, "Oh, my God." He was fine, well, running ear to ear, had a ball.
He's okay. He's okay. Well, he's still okay. We still talk to him. I wished him happy birthday, actually, two days ago, so I didn't forget.
The thing about Igor is he's just one of the guys. I mean, he is. He's not pretentious. He's, you know, he doesn't think of himself as this big deal. We tease him all the time about it, and he just kind of laughs at us, you know. But he's just a very easygoing, laid-back guy.
Well, that's great. Now, by the way, Robin, I'm going to have to stop you for just a moment because the WCW retro crowd has just joined us. And first of all, Papa Stroh, how are you doing?
Great to be here with you guys. Deja vu, man. What a segue.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here.
How are you, sweetheart?
Hi, Robin.
And
how are you doing?
Doing great.
Yep, and none other than the one and only Granny Hulkster is here with us.
Hey, everybody. Hey,
Granny.
I'm good. I'm good. Robin. Hi, Robin. How are you? It's so funny. You know, you get off one podcast with so many of these people, and call right into the next one, you know. And I was actually late calling in. I was actually late calling in WCW Retro tonight because a really good friend of mine, he was starting his podcast back up, and he did a special show, so I had to help him out for about 30, 35 minutes. And so
that's why I was
late calling in WC Retro.
Watch out, y'all. I brought my tag team partner, Granny, with me. So I'm giving her the hot tag. So she's gonna get some
back. I'll protect you, bro. I'll protect you.
Thank you. I need all
I'll
I can get, Randy.
I'll protect you from all the scary stuff, you know. I'll put some ghost in a headlock or something, you know. So.
And of course,
they're very scary, Granny.
They don't want to mess with me. I mean, you know.
And they sure don't.
I have a lot of people try to mess with Granny, and they're usually very sorry that they do that. So, all you scary people out there, all you scary ghosts, you leave my friends alone, because if you don't, Granny's going to have to hurt you.
I'm going to tell you what, Papa Stro, I bet you that if Robin McRae and Granny Hulkster were a tag team, they would be the international world champion of everything, don't you? Nobody would mess with them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
They might as well call it a night, you know, hanging it up.
I mean, the best thing they could do would be to hope for Tommy Rich to come referee. That would be great. Absolutely.
I love Tommy Rich back in the day.
Yep. Well, what we're talking about tonight.
Somebody say
is
something
Dr.
about
Igor.
Robin and Granny Hulkster.
Yep.
And
here's Steve Logan. So we got the whole crowd has descended upon us from WCW. It's great to have all of you here. And tonight we've got a double header. First of all, tonight one of Dr. Igor Burtsev's best friends is Robin McRae, and we're having kind of a tribute to him. He's the greatest Bigfoot researcher in the world from Moscow. And then Shane Olive is going to join us halfway through the show and talk about more ghost stories from the Perryville battlefield, and the most incredible battlefield in the world for ghosts. And I've got a very sad story to tell after Shane and I did some research. And I've got a very sad story, and it'll let you know the horrors of war, even though they were 1862. It was terrible, and war is a horrible thing. So anyway, I'm going to get back. Robin was telling us about how Dr. Igor Burtsev went out with her kids, and he was skateboarding, and he got all bloody. But he said, I'm fine. Right, Robin?
Oh, yeah. He was having a ball. He wanted to go back out. And I said, over my dead body. It was like I got turned into the mom of four.
Well, of course, you're super mom. You always call me up and yell at me. You take care of all of us. I mean, we couldn't stay alive without.
That's what I do.
Exactly. He
decided he was gonna. I think was gonna watch the Bigfoots come in and get the food that we had put out. And we took a jar and put a bunch of chicken in it so we could have them undo the jar. And so he decided he was going to sit out there because they came in every night and got food. And he said, I'm going to sit outside in the truck and I'm going to watch them. And the truck was like maybe 70 feet from where they would eat at.
Right.
And I said, okay, you go right ahead. He sat out there all night long. Nothing happened. He just sat there looking at it. Nobody came in. Finally, about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, he decided he wanted a cup of coffee. So he gets out of the truck and he comes in the house to get a cup of coffee. He comes back out and the jar that had the chicken in it that was over where we put the food out for was sitting on the hood of the truck. He sat out there all night long. He was not in the house maybe 3 minutes. He comes back out and they brought the jar over and set it on the truck. So mad.
Thank you.
They play pranks on him. Every time he's at my house, it doesn't matter if it's in Michigan or here, they play pranks on him.
Of course. Now, at the risk of being a little bit National Enquirer, he does like to go swimming in the cold, doesn't he?
He He loves swimming, period. Doesn't matter what the weather is. And he has over the years sent me pictures of him swimming in these glaciers, you know, like the polar bear club thing. Only most of the people in the polar bear club will wear like the rubber suits and stuff to get it. Not him. He just goes in. Yeah, he loves it. He loves to swim. When he was here last summer, I would take him into the pool in town, and he would swim up there for, I don't know, however long, but he is an avid swimmer.
In his
speedo. He really is. Yeah.
And he does wear
speedos. They hit Russian, when they're in Russia, they wear speedos. They don't wear like our kind of bathing suits. And so that's been a big deal of contention for him when he's here, because he used to bring a swimsuit with him every time. And the last time he forgot it, and he said, "We need to go get me a swimsuit." And I said, "We are going to have issues because we are not going to find what you want for a swimsuit." And he was so disgusted when we went to the store. "Why would you swim in these?" I said, "These are men's swim trunks." "No, no, no." And we finally found something that worked, but he was not a happy camper over the swimsuit situation.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, he was. No, he's great. I got to really know him. When he was over here, he's just such a neat guy, and he's got a couple. He's got a number of books out, and you are in possession of his brand new book. What's it called?
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about it. It's a super, super book.
It's called Hominology in Action. It's the first book in a series. It's going to cover the early stages of Bigfoot, back all the way back to Portioff. It will cover myself, Janice Carter. It'll cover the Siberian Conference. It will cover activities in different contactees that he's encountered. It is an all done in colored pictures. So it's really a fabulous book. He's put a lot of time, effort, and years of himself into this book. And we have that right now is for sale, as well as T-shirts for the Hominology project that he founded. And so, yeah, just get hold of us or John, and we can set you up.
That's exactly right. When is he anticipating being back here?
If it was up to him, he'd already be back. Right now, everything is on hold for his plans due to the COVID. Normally, he generally tries to work his way here right about the end of the summer and then stay through the fall. If it works out that way. Right now, it's up in the air because of all the stuff with the COVID. Now, he has already said, we were talking about conferences, and I said, well, right now they're shut down, but we're hoping to get them going again. And he said, he wished he was here because he would like to be involved in that as well. So everything right now is depending on this virus, depending on how long it can be shut down. He is in isolation. For anybody interested, he has self-isolated in his own unique Igor Borshtev way. He's self-isolated, I want to add. I said to him the other day, we text back and forth, and he was messaging me, and I said he wanted to know if I was doing okay and was I sick or anything, and I said, no, I'm fine. I said, are you all right? He says, yes, I am fine. I am self-isolated. I said, really? I said, what are you doing now? I said, I'm in the park. I said, what happened to self-isolation? You said you were self-isolated. He says, I am. I'm self-isolating myself in the park. And the park that's not too awful far from his house has got an awful lot of activity there with the Bigfoot, which is fantastic because we're finding that the structures they are building over there in Moscow are the same structures that they are building here in the States. And that also coincides with what they're building in other parts of the world. So it seems to be some form of a generalized communication. But he's staying in the house, and then he goes out to the park to get some fresh air and to go out there and check on the different structures that have been built. So he's doing his own form of self-isolation. When I talked to him this morning when I got up and I messaged him and wished him happy birthday, he said he was going to be at home, but he was hoping to, get a video chat with his family. And then he messaged me later and was happy his daughter was going to come over and her husband. So he was quite excited about that. It's hard for him. He's not used to self-isolation. Igor Borshtev sits nowhere. He's constantly in motion, 24 hours a day, 8 days a week. He's either working or he's on the way to see somebody that's having activity. So I'm sure this has been quite difficult for him. He's getting lots of work done on the computer, but I'm sure it's difficult for him.
Well, just let him know two things. Georgia Bigfoot Conference is the third weekend in September, and the second weekend in October is Tennessee. He will, if he will be over here, he will be the keynote speaker at both of them. People loved him.
Absolutely.
He will unfortunately miss the new Kentucky Bigfoot Conference, which is going to be in June. It's June 5th. So Lizard Man is moving to May. Lizard Man is moving to May next year so that we can have the Kentucky Bigfoot Conference. It's going to be in Summerview, Kentucky. And it's a beautiful town. Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Don't want to forget this because I keep forgetting this every time I talk to you. Are you thinking of doing any, because we just kind of touched the subject briefly, any type of night outings or anything for the Bigfoot? Because I have somebody coming from Michigan to see the conference, and he asked me about it, and I said, at this time, to my knowledge, no. That doesn't mean something won't be set up. You know, I said, I'll
talk
to John.
What are you talking about?
Which Kentucky
conference? Kentucky. Well, we can certainly do it because it is on the 37th parallel, which, as you know, is quite a spectacular place to be. So much paranormal activity going all over the world on the 37th parallel. So we're planning on for sure a Sunday Bigfoot excursion, but we can certainly, if we need to do a Saturday night one, that would be great. And as it is in the summertime, it's going to be light up until about 8 or 8:30. So we can certainly work that out. So just whatever, discuss that with me after, you know, anytime.
Yeah. Well, I told him, I said, you know, we've got plenty of time to make adjustments, I would be sure and let you know.
Right, and we are also hometown of the International Museum and Research Center of Cryptology. So we're going to have the people that have, they've got a wonderful museum about cryptids. They are going to be there. I mean, Kentucky is going to be just one of the most fabulous places. And then what we will do is we will probably schedule a ghost outing at Perryville Cemetery, Perryville Battlefield. While we're out there, it's only an hour away, and I can go ahead and announce the Kentucky Paranormal Conference is the 18th of July in Danville, Virginia. Danville, Kentucky. We're all over, and Danville, Kentucky is only 15 minutes away from Perryville Battlefield. I got the knot today that we are officially there. The night of July the 18th, it's going to be spectacular. It's the most haunted battlefield, other than it and Gettysburg are the two most haunted battlefields from the Civil War. Shane Ollick's going to be here in a few minutes, and he's going to talk about some of those stories. But absolutely, we're gonna have a grand time, and if the world works out right. The more I think about it, Granny, about us coming to visit you in Arkansas and going down to Folk, Arkansas, the more and we will see if Lyle Blackburn would drive up to Folk. You know, Lyle being the best-selling author of, the Folk Monster book, his brand new book was called The Missouri Monster, which topped the charts. We want Lyle to come hang out with us. We might even have to get somebody to drive from Emerald Isle to Myrtle Beach and then ride over to Folk, Arkansas, Papa Stro. If I give you 6 months' notice, hopefully you can schedule that, okay?
Oh, my goodness.
I mean,
come on, Stro. You want to come to Arkansas, don't you?
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah, it'd be great to be back.
Well, just so that you know, you might have to eat to share a barbecue. But other than that,
yeah.
I can't wait. We'll probably have a couple guys from The Walking Dead fire up to see us. And you know what, Granny? This might be a big enough crowd. We might, of superstars, we might just have to rent us a room and call it a conference out in Folk, Arkansas. What do you think, Granny?
Oh, you that help sounds me good. That sounds good. I'm sure.
You'll help me do it.
If you,
we'll get loud blathering.
Yeah,
it, you'll have
yeah if you got to give me at least 6 months' notice, too, you know, because, I mean, you know, but.
I'll give you 5 because you live in Arkansas.
You'll give me 5? Okay, because I
live
in Arkansas.
You live in Arkansas.
Okay, 5 months' notice. Okay. So you
no,
get 6 months'
no
notice, I get 5 months' notice. So, you know, that's
nah,
okay.
Imagine that, right?
And I live 10 hours away, and you live 5 hours away. So that's why you only, and Robin, you live 8 hours away, so we'll give you 5.5 months' notice. How's that?
There you go.
Absolutely. You know what? There's no reason not to have a paranormal conference out in Folk, Arkansas. Lyle Blackburn would love it. I'll talk to him. You know what? That's what life's about, is doing things with your friends. Papa Stro and Granny and Robin and Lyle. I mean, golly, how much fun could that be?
That could be a blast.
And joining us from, and of course we'll have Kevin Holland from The Walking Dead there. He's from Alabama. And of course we'll have, Shane, you don't know this yet, but we're hooking you up to go to Folk, Arkansas with us, the home of the Folk Monster, the Boggy Creek incident. Shane Hollis, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Fine. He's all the way from... Where are you exactly?
In Somerset, Kentucky, about 75 miles south of Lexington, Kentucky.
That's right, and you're in the home of barbecue where they have Alabama white sauce, that horseradish. Oh, my God, it's great. Everybody, that's the only reason we got Shane, is because he's up there where they have Alabama white sauce, and it's an excuse for me to come up there and enjoy it on my barbecue. But no, Shane's a great guy. He's a marvelous ghost hunter. And I mean, he's a real ghost hunter. So we're glad to have you here. You have joined us with all of our friends from WCW Retro. We've got ladies first. We have Granny Huckster. Then we have Papa Stro with us, Steve Logan, and everybody will get to meet Shane. If we can all get there for the 18th of July for the Kentucky Paranormal Conference. Then, of course, in the spring, we'll have Kentucky Bigfoot. And I tell you what, the folks at Perryville Battlefield are thrilled to have us. Right? We got the confirmation about the 18th today. And it's not exactly easy to get on there, but it's a beautiful place. It's a place where there's been so much turmoil, that incredible battle. Shane, how many people died in that battle?
I think somewhere around like 7,000. Well, I don't know about dying, but there was like at least 7,600 casualties, meaning like wounded, missing, and killed in action within about 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, it was terrible. And I'm going to go ahead and tell the one sad story that I have. Robin, you know how you can keep getting vibes about people from the past, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's a book by a gentleman who is actually the executive director of that park, and his name is Rusty Brian Bush. Brian Bush. And he has a story in his book about this little drummer boy. Hey, Shane, why don't you tell the story, and then I'm going to tell you about the vibe that I got and what we're kind of researching, and I'll tell everybody about the sadness that we came across yesterday. So tell them the story of the little drummer boy, if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, from the story that John's talking about in the book, there was a group of reenactors that was they were camped and behind the museum at Perryville Battlefield, and they were camped there for a reenactment, and That morning, it was a crisp, cool fall morning. It was probably whenever they were doing their reenactment there in the fall of the year for the Battle of Perryville, which is usually around October 8th, somewhere on that time. So it was a cool, crisp morning. The reenactors were just getting us out of their tents. And a lady that was the camp cook, she was cooking. And some of the reenactors had got a fire going, made some coffee. And at some point in time, while they were sitting around the fire, this little boy that in the book, it said somewhere around 12, 13 years old, but John, he feels like he's a bit more older, but he appeared, somehow he just appeared and sat there amongst the other reenactors, and he was just staring at the fire, and he never joined in on the conversations that was going on or nothing, and he just stared there into the fire, and whenever the camp cook announced that it was time to eat, the breakfast was ready, everybody got up, and she was telling them to get their plates and their cups, get in line, and the little boy, he got in line somewhere in the line with everybody, but he didn't have a cup. They noticed he didn't have a cup or a plate, so they told him to get a plate or a cup, and everybody where they were getting their food and stuff, they never really seen him get a cup or a plate. They just seen him in line and just never did go get a plate or nothing. And so they thought that was kind of odd. And after everyone got their breakfast and stuff and sat back down to eat, they noticed he was no longer around. He was gone. And so after they got done eating breakfast, they went around to some of the other camps that was camped in there around the area and talked to other reenactors.
Yes.
So they went around, some of the reenactors that had seen him, they went around to some of the other camps talking to other reenactors to see if they had noticed this little boy. And they said that in the book, it said that he was wearing a gray wool pants. He was a Confederate soldier. He was wearing gray wool pants, and he had a gray kepi Confederate hat. And they went around these other camps looking for him and asking if anyone had seen him, and no one around had seen him at all in any of the other camps. And so they ended up going up to the museum, and they probably talked to a lady named Belinda that runs the museum, if she was there back at that time period. They went up there and talked to someone at the museum, and the manager, like I said, Belinda, probably. And after talking to the manager of the museum, they were asking if she had seen the little boy, and she said that she hadn't seen nobody by that description, but she said that there has been several visitors to the park that has told her that they have seen a little boy in that area that fit that same description. And like I said, they went outside the museum and everywhere looking for him, never could find him.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, Robin, with your knowledge of ghosts.
I was waiting for that.
Well, yeah, and then I've got a sad ending to that story. But, you know, Robin, how much energy does it take for a ghost to materialize like that?
A lot. A lot. And they have to drop from somewhere, whether it is they're drawing energy off all the people maybe that were there. He could pull enough off of it collectively to be able to materialize. You know, a lot of times if you're in a house, you notice the lights will flicker, it's because they're drawing the energy from the light bulb, or you'll find a cold spot, it's because they're drawing the energy from the heat, and that's why it's cold. But everything is energy-based, and they have to have energy in order to materialize. My guess on this is that it actually was a ghost boy. I don't think it was a living person, per se, and I really get a lot of sadness from them. He's seen a lot of people die. And that's why he's still attached. That's why he's still here.
Well,
he feels like he can't leave the people that he saw die.
Yeah, well, the story, it's interesting because Shane did some research on the Perryville database. And he found, because I told him initially I thought the boy was 13, and then the next day, about a week ago, I said, no, the boy is 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave him a name, but I said, the name's wrong. And so he found a 14-year-old boy that was associated with it. And let me tell you this horrible thing. You know, the Union and the Confederacy did not like each other. And there was this boy, well, his name was Columbus, right, Shane?
Yeah, that was the 14-year-old boy that ended up, that was wounded and died 2 days after Christmas.
Well, what happened was this boy was wounded in the knee. And I have another, the surgeon, you know, it's really interesting. The Surgeon General of Murder 123 seems to have some psychic ability. And the deal was, I said, you know, the record shows he was injured in the knee. And Dr. Trey Donaway said, he was shot in the knee, John. I said, how do you know that? He said, I don't know. That's just what I understand. He was shot in the knee. He was shot.
This kid saw a lot.
Well,
I mean, he saw a lot.
here's the horrible story of this poor kid. Is that he suffered this injury on October the 8th. He was captured on October the 9th. And then comes the most horrifying thing. He died on December 27th of complications from his injury. So for 2.5 months, he was in captivity of the Union up there near Perryville, wherever they had their camp and their jail. And I get the feeling, and I've never even heard the term, it's called a fight circle, where they get around and they start beating up a prisoner, and then they bounce around, and wherever they come over, they beat them up in a circle, and they do it until they pass out. And I got the horrible
injuries.
And I get the horrible feeling that he was the subject of a fight circle every day because he was a little 14-year-old boy.
He had internal injuries when he died.
Yeah, and I just got this horrible feeling. And, you know, war is such a terrible thing. We don't need to hurt people. I mean, everybody will say, well, we disagree, but, you know, it was the saddest vibe, and I just saw this thing. You know, Robin, you know how it is when you just see something.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And I told that to Shane earlier today, and that's one reason I want to. I'm actually headed up there to get the plans going for the Kentucky Paranormal Conference in about 2 weeks, hopefully a week from this Friday, or 2 weeks from this Friday. And Shane, if you can, we discuss it. I hope you and I can go up there to Perryville. I want to meet those fine folks where we're going to be doing our event. And I just want to see kind of vibes. You know, maybe we'll take a battery and see if somebody will materialize. But it's sad. And what all happened at Perryville was just, it was awful. It was a terrible moment for humanity. And I feel very bad about all the people that died there, all the people that got captured there.
That little boy
there.
Still hasn't gotten over it.
Well, obviously
like he's
not.
Still, no, he hasn't. He is filled with so much sadness. It's like literally immobilizing. And he just keeps shaking his head and he says, they died. So many died.
And I just get the feeling he's going to be happy when we come up to see him. That's what we're doing. That's what we're going to do, right, Shane?
Yes, we are.
And you know, it's terrible, but Perryville is like basically one of the two crown jewels of the Civil War when it comes to battles. And by the way, they're looking for money. They're trying to expand the battlefield through the American Battlefield Association. our again, our Surgeon General, Dr. Trey Donaway, Perryville is actually the lead story in this month's American Battlefield Ledger, which is their magazine. And so he was excited that we're going up there. Hopefully he'll be able to join us, he and his wife, because he's such a Revolutionary War fanatic. Hopefully he'll be able to come, he and his wife can come join us on July the 18th. If not, then our big shindig is going to be November the 7th up there. Yes, ma'am?
When you go there and you guys are doing research on this, I want you to look and see if you can find anything about what went on the day that he got hurt, because he's insisting and insisting, like he has guilt on him, and he's insisting that because of him, some of these other guys got killed. So I don't know if it was a matter of when he was taken prisoner, you know, maybe somebody came in to help. I don't know. But he has a lot of guilt, and I keep telling him that he has nothing to be guilty for. He's just a kid.
Yeah.
But he's really upset. Yeah, he's really upset about the people that he saw die, and he keeps saying, it was my fault. I should never have been here. It was my fault. And he's really, really upset. So I don't know that anything will be written about that. If maybe, you know, he showed up in the wrong place and shouldn't have never gone there, and, you know, they went and jumped and got him, and maybe somebody came out to help. I don't know. He's not saying anything about that. He is just being very adamant. He has got so much sadness and guilt in there. It literally, like, it weighs 1,000 pounds. And he keeps saying, it was my fault. They shouldn't have died. It was my fault. If I wouldn't have, they wouldn't have died. And I think that has a lot to do with why he's staying there.
Well, we'll see what we can do. And Shane, maybe between now and in 2 weeks, we can talk to either Cassidy Ray, she's a medium up there, or Bill Scott, and see if one of them would come out there with us. It might do some good. We will see. But anyway, that's one of the horrifying visions of war. That I mean, Robin gets the same thing. I get the same thing. And Perryville is a very sad place. It's beautiful. It's a sad place. But we want to celebrate what it is. It was one of the most amazing battles in Civil War history. And
we're going there for the conference, correct?
But I'm talking about in 2 weeks. I've got to go.
I know, but that's where the conference is at, is what I'm saying.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's where what we're doing is we're starting the conference out.
No, there's things he wants us to do when we go there.
Well, that's great. Robin, you and I can talk about that. You know, maybe tomorrow. I'd like to know what your thoughts are. We're going to try to find, you know, just obviously trying to reach out from beyond to somebody. He's got
I know
us,
how
I'm
to
also,
do what he wants me to do.
Well, okay, that's great. We will talk about that. We'll get it figured out. And so, as I said, in a couple of weeks, I will be going up there to see Shane. We're going to go to Perryville Battlefield, and then we'll get everything worked out for the conference. And I'll talk to you. I'll find out what we need to do and help the psychic ghost situation up there in Perryville. Anything we can do will be a great thing. It really will. So whatever we can do,
I think
it'll
help them.
Well, we hope it will. We hope it'll help everybody. And, you know, Perryville needs money to grow, and we want to help them. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. It's a horrible situation up there. But anyway, so that's what we got from Perryville Battlefield in Boyle County. Actually, there is a town, Perryville, in Perryville, Kentucky, but there is in Boyle County where Danville is. They've got a couple of distilleries up there where they brew rye and bourbon and everything. They've got a couple of breweries up there. They've got a very active chamber who's been very excited that we're going to be bringing some of this stuff to Boyle County. So I think it's going to be a great experience. And then on June the 5th, we'll be up there in Shane's hometown of What is it? I always wonder. It's not Somerville. It's not Somerton. It is.
It's Somerset.
Somerset. That's
yeah,
right.
Somerset.
Somerset's a positive and happy name for a town. So yeah, I'm too used to these to Somerville and Somerton here in South Carolina. But yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun, and we'll see what all happens. The whole crew is welcome. And Granny and Papa Stroh, we're going to see about coming over to Folk, Arkansas. They need to celebrate the monster, the folk monster, better known as the Boggy Creek Monster. They need to celebrate that, and maybe it will take the three of us. Of course, Robin is welcome to come, and we'll want you, Shane, to come, and Kevin Holland said he's up for anything. Kevin Holland, the current cast of The Walking Dead from Jasper, Alabama. What a great guy. He's on Pop Culture Stars with us. So it's going to be a lot of fun and everything. So, Shane, I tell you what. Do you have one more good ghost story from up there in your area from Somerset to Boyle County? You got one more good story to tell us?
That Boyle County is what you're asking about?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, mainly we're in that county. Most of the investigating I've done has been right here at Perryville.
Well, that's okay. I tell you what, you were telling me last night, there is a fascinating story. There's a documentary about it, and it takes place near you with that doctor. You remember the story about the three-toed small...
Oh, you're talking about the documentary that we were talking about, the Hellier.
Yes, I do. So tell everybody the story, because I don't think that anybody here knows this, neither does our listening audience. And this was fascinating.
Okay.
This not only was it fascinating, it is frightening.
Okay. I was telling John, there's some guys. Well, there's a guy and his wife that lives up in Cincinnati, Ohio. Their name is Greg and Dana Newkirk. They were, for a long time, Greg had been a paranormal investigator, investigating ghosts, and later on he got into UFOs, Bigfoot, anything cryptid, just anything strange and weird. And matter of fact, he has a website called Planet Weird, and he has some YouTube channels and things like that. Well, anyways, he was contacted a few years back by a guy he sent an email, and he said that his name was the guy that sent the email went by the name of David Christie, and this guy named David Christie that sent the email, or that was the name that he was using anyway, he claimed that he was from the town of Hellier, Kentucky, which is in eastern Kentucky, almost over near the Virginia border, like the Virginia and Kentucky border. And he was saying that he owned some land that had like an old mine shaft on the border of the property, and he said that he had seen these like goblins that was coming out of this mine shaft, and they had approached his house that night, and they were like chirping, making this like chirping, like kind of like a weird chirping like sound. And he said that his daughter had seen it and seen them. And I guess one night he said something about they had taken his dog or something. His dog disappeared. And so anyways, this guy that sent the email named David Christie, when he sent the email to Greg Newkirk, he told him about all this that had been going on with these goblins coming out of this mine shaft. The way he described them, they had like these big, like alien-looking eyes, but they didn't have no nose or nothing, no mouth, and he was making that chirping sound and stuff. And he told him about that he Well, Greg asked him if he had any, like, photos or anything like that, some kind of evidence he could show him or send to him. And he said he had some photos that he had taken. And so he sent Greg these photos. And they, in the photos, there was these three-toed tracks. I mean, it was a track with three toes. And he said that, and he also had another photo that had, it looked like it had been taken at night, so it didn't have a whole lot of light like it would in the daytime. It had been taken at night, and you could see something in it, but it was supposed to be these little goblins. And after Greg receives these emails, he was kind of like shocked by them because of what the guy was telling him. And he said that David Christie had told Greg Newkirk that someone had told him that he should contact Greg. And so at the time, like I said, Greg had never dealt with anything like this. So he started emailing this David Christie guy back and forth and trying to get more information from him. And before he could get an address from, like an exact address where this location was supposed to be, where he was seeing these goblins, he just quit emailing Greg. He just, like, stopped emailing him. And so Greg, he got together a group of guys. He got his wife, which is her name, Dana. He got her, and she's like she calls herself a hedge witch. And anyways, Greg and Dana, and they got two other guys that's from Estes Park, Colorado. They used to help out with some ghost hunts there. And one guy, I can't remember their last name. One guy's name is Carl, and the other guy's name's Tyler. And so the four of them got together, and Greg decided to name their little team Alien Cave Base Task Force. And so they get together with all these, they make copies of these emails, and where they didn't have an address over in Hellier to this David Christie's house, they decide to just take a trip to Hellier and talk to the locals and do some research, see if they can find anyone that knows David Christie. So they travel over to Hellier, and once they get there, they start talking to some locals, and no one knows this David Christie. I mean, they've never heard of him. And Hellier's a little small.
Shane?
Hellier's a little, yeah.
Shane, I want to stop right here and tell you two things. Number one, I want to talk to those people, because if I can get a copy of the emails, I can look at the header, and I can find out where those emails were actually sent from, number one.
Well,
geographically.
Now that you're mentioning that, it's kind of funny, because in this documentary, Hellier, I didn't mention it last night, and I was telling you, but later on, while they're at the cabin, Tyler tells Greg that they contact one of Tyler's friends. He's like a real high up computer tech, and he does what you just said. He told them what to search for, and they used like the IP address or something like that, and they searched it back. And I can't remember. I think it was somewhere up in Canada is where the email was sent from. So after they find out it was like it came from out of Canada. I think Greg and Dana used to live in Canada at one time. So they thought it. So whenever they seen that, they thought someone was just messing with them, because after they found out that no one in Hellier knows this David Christie or nothing, they thought that somebody is just using the name David Christie to send this email and this information and these photos and everything. And so after they found out it came from Canada, then their thoughts on it, they were like, this is strange that it came from Canada. So then during the whole documentary, they're traveling around to different places, and they're gathering more research there in Hellier, They're, like you said, at times they go to like Ashland, Kentucky. They get information from people that connected with the Mothman, and they're just, they're going around to different places, like you said, that, and they're gathering more information, and they do, they, while they're there in Hellier, they do some research, and they use a spirit box, and them two guys that's from the Estes Park, the Stanley Hotel that used to do the ghost hunts there, Carl and Tyler, they used a method with the spirit box that they call the Estes method. And with the Estes method, they take something like a sleeping mask, and they put over their eyes so they can't see nothing. And they plug headphones into the spirit box and put the headphone, they put the headphones on, and when they get the spirit box running, the only person that can hear the stuff that's coming, the audio from the spirit box, is who's wearing the headphones. And they're at, so Greg and Dana and Carl, they're asking questions while they're doing this investigation, where this cabin that they're staying at there and nearby Hellier. And while they're asking these questions, they've got some replies that's coming through that Carl is, or that Tyler's hearing. And Tyler, he speaks out, and he says, if he understands what's coming through the spirit box, he says what he hears. And so in the documentary, you can hear them asking questions to some of the entities that's around the cabin and the area where they are. And you can hear Tyler, like, saying what he hears. And like I said, some of the stuff that Tyler is saying it relates to the questions that they're asking. And like I said, Tyler, he can't hear none of the questions that's being asked because he's got the audio from the spirit box going through the headphones in his ears, and he can't see nothing, so he can't hear any of the questions. But he's just speaking what he's hearing, and they do that experiment there while they're at the cabin, and he sees a tin can. That's what Tyler says he sees. While he's doing this, he said he sees the image of a tin can that comes in his head. And later on in some of the other episodes of Hellier, they travel to this old train tunnel, and they do an investigation in the train tunnel. And whenever they're going in the train tunnel, they find a tin can in there. And then, anyways, there's a lot of... In the movie, or not the movie, but in the documentary, Greg Newkirk, he refers to all these little different incidences that lead them to, like it's a really good documentary, because at the time, like, whenever they feel like they don't have, like they're coming to a dead end and there's no more clues to, like, go any farther, they'll find something else, and it takes them and leads them in a whole other direction. And Greg Newkirk, he calls it synchronicities, and he says they have these synchronicities that they run into, and it takes them and leads them in a new direction. But it's a very interesting documentary. I mean, the way that they investigate the clues and stuff that they put together, they're talking, like I was telling John, they talk about some of the books that was written on the Mothman, like Ingrid Cole.
Ingrid Cole, that's right.
They talk about a guy named Terry Riss, and another guy named Alan Greenfield, I think is his name.
They're all in the Mothman.
They even do in the, I think either in the, I think it may be in the second season, they even go talk to that Alan Green. They talk to him, and they show some more experiments that they do and stuff, and it's really interesting. But they eventually end up coming to Somerset. They get some emails from people, and they tell them that they should come to Somerset. And so they end up coming here to Somerset, and while they're here in Somerset, they talk to a friend of mine named Kyle Cadell. He owns and runs the International Paranormal Museum Research Center here in Somerset. They talk to him, and he puts them in touch with a friend of his that tells them about how here in Somerset, it's the 37th parallel runs through Somerset, and you got these, like, you got lime in the hills here. You got lime and quartz, and he was talking about all the strange things that's happened around here. There's been Bigfoot sightings. There's been sightings of UFOs. There's been there's areas that people seen these robed figures. There's secret societies, unsolved murders. There's even, he even talked about here in Kentucky, like in Eastern Kentucky, there's a mental hospital called Eastern Kentucky. I don't know exactly where it's located at, but mental patients from all over the state get sent to that mental hospital. And he said that out of all the patients there, 70% of them come from Pulaski County, which is where Somerset's at. And so he thinks that there's a big connection here with a lot to do with the 37th parallel and this all the strange things, a lot of strangeness here.
All right, now Shane, I want to stop you for just a minute because I want to say, Robin McRae, why do I want to have the Kentucky Bigfoot Conference in this town?
Well, it sounds like there's so much going on there. You might as well. I mean, it's got a little
exactly.
bit of everything going on.
Exactly, and I think we'll have a grand time there. Papa Stroh, the Maestro of Wrestling. So I hope that you'll clear out June the 5th to come up there, because I know you've got fans up there, and I know we're going to have a crazy-ass time in Somerset, Kentucky. Would you check your schedule and let me know next week?
Yeah, I'll check it out and let you know for sure.
Because I'm telling you, we have found the world capital of paranormal up in Kentucky, between Perryville Battlefield and between Somerset. And it's so great to have a host like Shane up there that knows that he lives there. I was talking to the lady at the Civic Center where we're going to hold the Kentucky Bigfoot Conference up there in June, and she said, you know, John, this is a kind of a scary place. I mean, people are a little afraid of going out near the lake where it's so desolate. And there you go. So I think we've got, not only do we have a great place in terms of Lakemont, Georgia, in terms of Kingsport, Tennessee, and now we've found the home of Bigfoot, and that is very near, by the way. Somerset is very near the Daniel Boone National Forest, which is just filled with Bigfoot. Oh my God!
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Robin, even I can feel that one. It's an easy one. So we're going to have a grand time up there in Kentucky for 3 days, first weekend in June, and they're excited about having us up there. And so, and Tony Pelosi will be able to come up. It's only like an hour and a half away from Harlan, from the murder capital of the world, as we found out in Murder 123. So we're going to have a grand time up there, and it's just a good time to announce these things. There are a lot more, you know, I hate to say it, and I'm going to go ahead and get this out. I may as well, because I can do it on ScaryCast. These paranormal events, like the Kentucky Bigfoot Conference and the Kentucky Paranormal Conference, they're a lot more fun to run than Comic-Cons, I'll tell you. I mean, you know, people love this stuff. And when we've got such great hot spots like Somerset and like Perryville, you know, we're very fortunate that folks are looking forward to us coming up there. So anyway, that's great. And Shane, thank you for telling us the story. And I want to thank all of our wonderful friends Now, Granny Hulkster, do you have any comments or questions? Your questions were priceless last week. Do you have any questions or comments?
Well, you know, I don't really have any questions. I've really just enjoyed listening to all these stories and everything. But I kind of do have a question for Shane. I don't know if he can maybe answer this or not. But this happened to me one time, Shane. I was at Silver Dollar City with my mom and my dad and my little boy. And we were at a music show. Now, my mom's mother, she passed away in 1999, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lady that I saw at this music show. Now, my grandmother would always, she had red hair, glasses, she would wear white slacks, a white pink blouse, carry a white purse a lot of the time. There was a lady that looked, if I hadn't known that my grandmother had passed away, I would have swore that was my grandmother because she loved music. And I saw her walk down, and I saw her sit down in a seat. Well, I wanted to get closer because I loved this band. It was, they were called the Cajun Connection, and they had the world's best fiddle player. I mean, the guy would play the fiddle, and he'd start dancing around in circles, you know, while he was playing that fiddle, and he would just keep going and going and going. Well, I went down to where that row was, where that lady sat down. Now, I never saw her get out of that seat. There was no way she could have gotten out of there without me seeing her leave. And when I went down to that row, that lady was not there.
Wow.
So, I mean, I don't know, you know, I mean, I've seen some pretty strange things in my time. I mean, mm-hmm. I used to live at Holiday Island, and I'm not know how familiar you are with the tales of the Crescent Hotel there in Eureka Springs, but you know that hotel is known to be haunted. I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with that hotel, but
I've heard of it before, but I've never been there and don't know a whole lot about it, but I've heard of it before.
Yeah. Well, but it just, I thought that was so amazing that that lady looked so much like my grandmother, and then all of a sudden she was there, and all of a sudden she was gone. I mean, just like, kind of just like that little boy. People saw that little boy, you know, and then all of a sudden he was gone,
They said he was standing in line there with everybody, and they told him to get a plate, and then where everybody was in line, they wouldn't, like, looking back at him. He must have been at the very back of the line because you would think somebody, if he was in front of someone, they'd have seen him just disappear, but they got their food and stuff, and then by the time they got their food and turned back around, and they got back around to the tent fire, he was nowhere around, just gone. And
I've also
had a good friend of mine who's a paranormal investigator that was investigating a cemetery with some friends one night, and they had a man that approached them. They tried to introduce themselves to him, shake hands with him, and he wouldn't shake hands with him, which they thought was very odd. He told them his name was Chris, and he asked what they were doing there, and they told him they were ghost hunting, and they told him that if he wanted to join them, they had room for him to join, and he said, no, I better be going, and he told them that he said, y'all guys, be careful, and he started walking off, and as he was walking away, they all turned around like in a little huddle, and they were like around in their group, and they were talking about how strange that was, that how he wouldn't shake hands or nothing. And then this in the split second of them talking, they turned back around, and that guy that they was talking to was totally gone. And like you said, he was gone. And there was the way they talked, that the little bit of time they were had their back turned, there was no way that somebody could have got out of their sight that quick. They took their lights and shined all around and went looking for him, never could find him. And they said he was just as solid as you or me. He was like a real living person, but he just vanished really quick.
Well, the man that I'm married to now, my second husband, before we got married, he actually moved back in to his mother. It was his mother's house before she passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And after she passed away, he was doing something And he was there by himself, him and just his little dog. And he heard someone say hello. And he thought it was me, you know, coming in the house. And he was in the kitchen doing something, or in the one of the rooms or something. And he came in the living room, and there was nobody there.
Wow.
Nobody there at all. I mean, and he said the hairs on the back of his neck just stood straight up, just like.
Wow.
I'll share a really funny story with you one time.
Yeah.
He had an old cell phone that had a tendency of dialing people's phone numbers. And when I still had my landline in my house, his phone actually accidentally dialed my number one night. And he was in the bathroom brushing his teeth. And I could hear water running, and I'm like, and I could tell that it was David because the caller ID said his name, you know, his phone number. And I said, David, hello, David, are you there, David? And all of a sudden he heard this voice, and he didn't realize it was me talking to him on the phone because he didn't realize his phone had dialed my number. And he said, you talk about a scary feeling. He says, I thought my mom's ghost had come back to haunt me or something.
Wow.
Well, that's cool. Well, Granny, we want to thank you for being with us on ScaryCast.
Always
so glad, and so glad we met you through Papa Stro. And Papa Stro, I want to say thank you so much for, and first of all, for getting me doing a podcast, number one, and number two, for doing a great show and letting me come on every week. And we love having you at our events. You're truly an international superstar. You're one of the coolest people anyone could know. So, number one, thank you. Okay?
Well, thank you.
And number two, it's about time that I get up to Emerald Isle next week and have lunch with you. So when I do my call around tonight after the show, we'll set up a day that you're available, and we'll have lunch at our favorite place. How's that?
Sounds great. Yeah, can't wait.
Absolutely. So, and as usual, I'll do the call around to everybody. Robin McRae, you are the most wonderful friend to have.
Oh, thank you, sweetie. You know, I feel the same about you.
Well, thank you. And we've been through so many adventures.
Yes, we have. It's only the beginning.
I was going to say, I hate to tell you this. It's just started. When we get up to Kentucky, we're going to go crazy.
Oh,
and we'll have our boys, Tony and Shane, and it's going to be nuts. So it's going to be more fun than anyone could ever have. And by the way, I have a very dear friend named Kyle Peckham. He and I ran a paranormal conference a couple of years called Charlotte Crypticon. And I'm sitting here with a copy, and I never thought to look, but this is a first edition of John Keel's Visitors from Space. It's the Mothman book. And it was called Visitors from Space when he published it first in the UK. And it is the absolute first edition. And how lucky can I be? Kyle bought it for me for my birthday a couple of years ago. And it's just like, and he's getting married here soon, I think in May. So I will personally invite all of you down to Kyle's wedding if you can make it in the Charlotte area. He's such a super guy. And we're going to have him on because he's got some terribly frightening stories. And he said he'd go ahead and tell them. But I'm sitting here. Thank you, Kyle Peckham, for my copy. For my first edition of Visitors from Space, The Astonishing True Story of the Mothman Prophecies. So there we go. It's right here next to Mike Roberts' book, I'm a Ghost Hunter. So I have a crazy, crazy place. I want to thank everybody, and I mean everybody, for being on the show tonight. I'll do the call around when we're done. And thank you. We'll be back next week. We've got some interesting folks. Tony will be back. Devin will be back. And we got just some great things happening. So thank you. And next adventure, Murder 123, Monday night, 10 p.m. Join us for Murder 123. Papa Stro will be there. He's the co-host. Robin's the co-host. Tony and Devin. And we will have another great adventure into the murder and paranormal world. So thanks a lot, everybody. Granny, we love you. Robin, we love you.
Love y'all too.
They're the best.
Take care.
Granny, I sent
bye-bye.
You a text message.
Bye.
All right, we'll talk to everybody.
Yep.
I'll talk to everybody soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.